Welcome along. I think I'm right in saying that we're all encouraged by the recent revival in fortunes of La Liga clubs in Europe. Yes, from 9 o'clock Central European time, Granada and Villarreal spearheaded the bold new era. And did you see those possession stats? They definitely won the possession game. Now, everybody else can have the age-old debate, Mbappe or Haaland. I mean, obviously Haaland's a fraud. Have you seen his record in away games on Wednesday nights? But seriously, we need to talk about coefficients. La Liga is defending a lot of points from 2017. Last year was bad for the Spanish sides, and if they don't do well, we'll all have to listen to the best league in the world stuff from the Premier League cheerleaders. Now, they might have a point, but it will be irritating when they point to evidence that they willfully ignored for years. Now, we're honest here, and the stats suggest there has been a slight decline in the standard of European performances from Spanish clubs in the last couple of years. It really dipped last season. Just the top teams, though, see no evidence of a weaker La Liga from 1 to 20. But if you've also been watching carefully all this time, as you all have, and listening to us, this week's setbacks for Barca, Sevilla, Real Sociedad weren't a great surprise, even if it always was a little bit humbling. And we won't run away from a difficult situation. We're not Diego Carlos, for example. Without silly scapegoating, let's be fair, for example, to Gerard Piqué's 34 and he had just come back from a long-term injury, and to Sergio Busquets, who's 47 and just come out of retirement. Well, you explain the running stats then. And also, can someone explain to the Spanish coaches about counter-attacking?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Terry, we've got difficult things to talk about here, haven't we? Like I say, you know, It was a disappointing week. The results could have gone better. They didn't. They went badly. Let's be frank about that. But it sort of had been coming. So we'll do the individual games, shall we? One by one, and then we'll pick up on a general theme about you know where it's going. But it's probably all stuff that we've talked about before, to be fair, isn't it? About where it needs to go. So shall we start? I don't know what was worse. We'll start with Barca, shall we? That hammering by PSG.
Yeah, I think we have to start there. I think that it's evident, isn't it, that we have seen a bit of upturn in performance levels from Barcelona in La Liga in recent weeks. But there's always been a nagging doubt in my mind when they've played the bigger teams. Mm. They've lost every game this season. I mean, they've won at Juventus in the Champions League, but they got thumped 3-0 at home. Recently, they lost 2-0 away to Sevilla in the first leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final. They've been beat by Real Madrid. They've been beaten by Atletico Madrid. And they get thumped by PSG. So I think it does. That confirms their level at the moment is that, yes, they're top four in Spain. They're a million miles away from the team that we, you know, admired quite a while ago now. There's been a decline over recent years. And what with Koeman coming in, new manager, it is a transition period, clearly. Lots of good, very good young players and lots of old players. There's not a lot in between. And that's for poor planning from the club in general over the last few years, which has meant they've got the PKs, the Busquets, the Jordi Albas. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have the Trincao, Pedri, Fati, Mariba, Araujo. Ricky Puig, there's not a lot in between. I'm looking at the squad as an agent, and probably Clement Longley is the one that sits in the middle, and you know, and maybe Ter Stegen as a goalkeeper. So it's an a squad that's imbalanced, and of course Messi comes into that category as a 33-year-old. They've recently released Rakitic, who was in the age bracket, Suarez, who was in the age bracket, Arturo Vidal, and I think what we saw against PSG was an immature team against a grown-up team of established international footballers that are, you know, been playing at that level for quite some time. And there wasn't respect or fear in the play of PSG. They went to the Camp Nou expecting to win. They had a game plan. And unfortunately for La Liga teams this week, that game plan is far too easy to, you know, to instill and play and, you know, do against a team from La Liga. Where this week, I've sort of been a little bit of an awakening that perhaps there are too many similar teams. We've talked about La Liga's styles. There's a lot of teams that play one style and quite a few that play another style. And you joked about the counter-attacking. Mm. I'm struggling to think of a really top-class counter-attacking team in La Liga. I would hazard a guess that Real Madrid possibly are the best at doing that when they have their best players playing and fit. But other than that, Levante maybe. But they, you know, that's a mid-table team that's doing their best to stay in the division. It's not a team that consistently week in, week out hurts opponents by playing a counter-attacking type of game. Then we have the likes of Valladolid and Eibar and Athletic Bilbao predominantly who play a direct game, you know, but it's not based on counter-attacking play. It's based on two banks of four, then hit the front two, hope that they can hold on to the ball and allow the team to slowly but surely get up the pitch. We don't see a team that plays with a counter-attacking play of the level that we saw this week, which is to be expected. I mean, we're talking Champions League. The players and the clubs we're talking about are PSG, Dortmund, Manchester United, so top-class teams. But it's interesting that we had a brief conversation by WhatsApp last night, and we were talking about that in each of the three games we're going to be discussing in general, all Spanish teams had more, significantly more possession than their opponents.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barcelona, for instance, their possession stats, 53%, so they had more possession, but they had in passes, 532, PSG, 479. So not a massive difference in that one, but it's quite a surprise when you lose 4-1 and you've had more possession and you've had more passes. And that theme follows on with Dortmund against Sevilla. They did exactly the same, and Sevilla had significantly more. Sevilla had 66% possession, 711 passes against 34% and 371 passes, and lose 3-2. And it could have been 5 or 6 goals they conceded. And it was exactly the same, believe it or not, Real Sociedad, who got smashed by Manchester United 4-0. At 60% possession, they had more passes, 507 to 346. And I liken it to a boxing fight where someone's got a really good jab and technically they're really good. And all of a sudden the other fella's got a knockout punch every 5 minutes, every couple of rounds. And that's what's happening in these games. And it was naive play from the three teams we're talking about. And you look at PSG, if we're talking predominantly about that game to start the podcast, the goals are, you know, hit on the counter-attack, on the break. And if you defend as high as Barcelona do with not very fast defenders, Piqué was an issue. It was a gamble to play him after 3 months out. I was surprised at that choice from Ronald Koeman. And when you're asking for trouble, when you just play, you know, two players around the halfway line, you're stepping up, you're playing too high, never really looking to get behind PSG one way, then all of a sudden within 2 or 3 passes, PSG, when they want to, when they've sucked you in, can hit you on the break, and they have, you know, the quality in Mbappe in particular, Icardi, Moise Kean, and I thought the midfield players of PSG were outstanding, offered something going forward, they offered loads defensively, and, you know, I think that was, although Mbappe is the standout player because of the hat-trick, I thought in general there was lots of other players for PSG you could have labelled as man of the match. So it's a bit of a rude awakening, I think, for the style of play that we have week in, week out in the Liga. So it's something I think that, you know, we're a lot of people are obsessed with possession, obsessed with pressing high. It's not a rule. It's not a law in football that you have to press high at every opportunity. You know, good teams do it at the right time. You don't need to commit 6, 7, 8 players into pressing high. You can do it with 2, 3, 4. I used to do it, you know, closing down from the front. Two attackers can defend against 4 if they want to play the ball out slowly. And then if you're backed up by at least 1 midfield player, you've got half a chance of forcing them to play the ball long or win the ball back. What we see from the Spanish clubs is then committing, you know, 4, 5, 6 players. And if the other team get through that initial closing down system, then the pitch opens up and then you can run right. And I'm afraid that's what it's slightly one-dimensional coaching methods which are leading to the downfall of the Spanish team so far in the European competition.
The most annoying for me, Terry, on that was Real Sociedad, actually, because they'd had the warning almost from the other two teams, and Manchester United, you know, everyone knows, and funny enough, I said to you on was it Friday we last, well, on Monday, anyway, when we last looked ahead, I said Manchester United are all about the speed. I know Bruno Fernandes is a good midfielder, but, you know, they've got lightning up front, and they stick Daniel James in as well, who scored the fourth goal, obviously, and so, but they didn't learn throughout the course of the game, and it was very frustrating, wasn't it? Because at Barca, it's more obvious. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, that Piqué struggles against pace, and Busquets, having Busquets as your deeper midfield player.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. And so, in a sense, but again, so it's all equally frustrating, isn't it? So we're looking at structural issues now, which exist, and we'll get to, but there are just tactical issues from this week as well. They could have played it differently.
Yeah, Barcelona, I mean, in particular, I mean, they've gone with the... I mean, Busquets looks alone in midfield in midweek in that game. I mean, Pedri wasn't at his best, but it was, you know, they've got to be careful with Pedri. He's 18, he's played loads of games this season. I warned Barcelona about overplay of Fati. He picked up an injury. I worry that the same will happen with Pedri. And that again was a rude awakening of the level that he's got to get to. You know, when you're playing PSG and they've got an experienced midfield of Verratti, who I thought was brilliant. Why didn't Barcelona? Why haven't over the last 3 or 4 years Barcelona bought a Verratti who's not up and coming when PSG bought him? He was already, you know, an established player, but the right age, you know, to give them that physicality and dynamism in midfield. Why didn't they ever go and buy one of them instead of a Rakitic or a Vidal or players of that ilk? You know, to make that gap between the old and the young, you know, less significant. I mean, Idrissa Gueye, he had to be taken off. Herrera comes on. Herrera could have done a decent job for Barcelona as a, you know, a more mobile, dynamic midfield player than what they have at the moment. And, you know, and Paredes was fantastic as well. So it's naive of Barcelona to think they can then squeeze up high. And you look at De Jong, who didn't have his best game against PSG. They were completely outplayed in midfield, outrun. They were outpowered. PSG just had too much know-how for them and had a tactical game plan that was easy, you know, to do against Barcelona. So, I agree with you. I think Agüero as well. I mean, every goal from Manchester United was in behind the defence. And Real Sociedad couldn't get behind Manchester United's defence. It was tough for them to do that. But Manchester United, when they got the ball, won it back quickly. And then, or if Real Sociedad gave the ball away, likewise with Sevilla, two or three passes going the other way, it was a chance. I mean, Real Sociedad conceded 4. That could have been 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Ramiro's played
well, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a big surprise that the gap was so big.
Yeah.
Likewise with Sevilla, they drive me mad. They are a team that have 2-touch passes, constant. It's control pass, control pass. Every pass is to a player that's standing still, where the opponent, in Dortmund's case, are happy for them to receive the ball. Their goal side, they Sevilla show patience. It's 2-touch, control pass, control pass. No movement off the ball. And then all of a sudden, either Sevilla lose a little bit of patience and Suso tries a back heel, or an Oliver Torres or Papu Gomez tries something a little bit different because everybody's fed up with 10, 15 passes that haven't gone anywhere. And as soon as the ball was given away, within 3 passes, Haaland's running in behind, terrorising the defenders. And it becomes that fear factor then that, but Sevilla had possession, likewise with Barcelona, likewise with Real Sociedad, where you know if you give the ball away, they're going to hurt you. Yeah. So you end up keeping the ball safe. Don't try anything where we might give the ball away because we know we're going to be chasing back towards our own goal. So that's something that has to be rectified. What we get in La Liga is lots of teams playing similar, so it's not as big an issue. But it is when it comes to European competition now, that's for sure. Granada beat Napoli 2-0 with 30-something percent possession.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the other side of the coin. I'm not saying you just sit back, but you have to have a plan. And if you're not quick at the back, you can't defend on the halfway line. You can't be looking to squeeze up and play offside. You know, if you're slow in midfield, what's the point in your forwards chasing around trying to win the ball back quickly when, if they don't do it, you're in trouble going the other way. So there's lots of things that maybe La Liga and the coaching has become a little bit one-dimensional. Perhaps it's the need of some people that watch football in Spain, that's, you know, pundits, media, supporters, that think that is the only way to play. It clearly isn't. The interesting thing is I don't know where Atletico fit into this category.
Yeah.
Because they play a similar style to Sevilla in terms of lots of two-touch passing to feet, to static players, and they don't have Suarez. With Suarez, they don't have that movement in behind. That comes from Joao Felix, that will come from Llorente, maybe Correa, and maybe one or two others that play in wider positions. But it's going to be interesting to see how Chelsea approach the game against Atletico next week. So I don't know where Atletico fit into all this. They could be a good counter-attacking team because they get bodies back behind the ball. They allow you possession. They don't go berserk and closing down up front and winning it back quickly. They do it at the right time. But then when they win the ball back, I always find them frustrating in the fact that they then take too long to then set an attack in motion. And that allows the other team to get back in position again. So it'd be interesting to see how Atletico approach it.
Let me ask you a question from Daniel, who says, why can't managers make Messi press with any effort or effectiveness? Considering his age and fitness, it would surely be better to have 60 minutes of pressing hard versus a lethargic one for 90 minutes. Also, a Messi, Busquets and Piqué, the rot, reducing Barca to carrion for top teams.
I'd still exempt Messi from any criticism. I'm not being a fanboy. I think at the age of 33, if he hasn't got the players around him, you look at a game the other night, the amount of times he dropped deep or dropped wide and got the ball and he's looking for a pass and there wasn't one on. And then he's forced to go on a dribble, go on his own, and it's futile. You know, he's running into bodies. The other team are not daft. They know that if they stop Messi, they're stopping, you know, a significant percentage of Barcelona's attacking play. I would say in that one, Griezmann was poor, Dembele was poor. Just when you think Dembele's turning the corner, he comes up with a poor performance. The progress between him, the difference between him and Mbappe is extraordinary when you consider they were both highly sought of at the same time. You know, when they were both young players playing for France, there didn't appear to be a lot of difference between the two. That gap has just, you know, gone miles away. Griezmann was poor. I can't think of any Barcelona players that actually excelled the other night. Even Ter Stegen had one of those games where he's hacking clear on a couple of occasions and miskicks it and it looked untidy. So I don't think Messi is the big issue. And if you got Messi, and you have to accommodate the game, your plan for him. I mean, as I said, there's no law that you have to press high constantly throughout the game. With someone like Messi, I think he does press. If the ball is given away in the final third and you've got half a chance of reacting quickly to put a defender under pressure, I think he does that. But when he's looking around and seeing that the backup in midfield, there is no point in going crazy as a striker. If you've got no chance of winning the ball, running around while three or four players play it around you, if your midfielder drops off or your midfield can't back you up. When it comes, it's a chain reaction. You know, I talked earlier about when I played, the two up front would split the four defenders. So you go, if I was playing up front, I would go between the left back and the centre half, and my teammate would go between the other full back and the other centre half. And you're kind of saying, go on, then play it to the full back because I'll get to him. Play it to the centre half, I'll get to him. If it goes to my side, I would go to the full back. My teammate would then come across to that centre half. So they can't play out there, then you only need one midfield player because the other option, the two options they've got, they can't get out. They play into midfield. Well, that's where you hope your teammate, you actually know. He will be, you know, recognise what you're doing. He will close down. So there's no pass into the midfield player. Then they go long. Then it's down to your defenders. So there's no law to say you have to do that all the time. In Messi's case, you want him on the ball. Suarez isn't doing it for Atletico Madrid. You know, he's not running around like a lunatic, closing people down. His job is to be the player that makes a difference. And I think Messi is that with Barcelona. So I think to ask Messi to, you know, constantly close down, high up the pitch, then get your midfield up high, then play the defence high, you're still asking for trouble.
I've got a couple of big questions then. So 10, 15 years ago, when Spanish football was, I mean, it was still at its best, 5 or 6 years ago. You know what I mean? Like I said, the coefficient points that they're defending this year from 16-17 were huge for Spain, which is why I think there's a good chance that they'll dip below the Premier League at the end of this European season, because the Premier League had a really bad year. That was the year after Leicester won the league, and the I think Leicester went furthest in the Champions League for all the English clubs that season. So, and then England had a couple of good years after that anyway. But, you know, in that period before then, because I think it was already a slight decline then, if I'm honest, and it wasn't yet reflected in the results. I think they were already making bad decisions, the big two in Spain. But they used to just, 10, 15 years ago, would have been now, say, Haaland and Mbappe would be going to, you know, probably Real Madrid. You know, certainly, you know, in Florentino's.
One each.
Real Madrid would have wanted both of them, wouldn't they? You know, that was that was what Florentino was would have been trying to do. I'm not sure you can see that realistically happening. I know the Spanish, I know Marca, they're reporting on Mbappe all the time, but they don't have the money, do they, to compete with the top English clubs, certainly with PSG financially, and questionably even with Juventus, despite the huge income that those two clubs still have. So it's not that it's income, it's how they wasted it, really. It is, you know, so you've got two different things going on. One is, I think La Liga, because of the more equal distribution in TV money, I still think La Liga, the rest of the bottom half of it is pretty strong. I look at the bottom half of the Premier League, and I don't think those teams are not miles better than the bottom half of the Spanish teams. It really is. The short-term issues at Real Madrid and Barcelona have wasted a lot of money and run their clubs, particularly Barca, badly. But obviously, there is the overall question. There's probably not as much money in Spain as there are in one or two of the other countries that they're competing about. So they're competing with. So where do we go long-term is my question. What do they do about this relative decline in La Liga at the top end?
I have no idea, if I'm being perfectly honest, particularly as the situation we're in now, where Barcelona and Real Madrid are not getting their 60, 70, 80, 90,000 people coming into the stadiums. You could argue it's hit those two clubs harder than most throughout Europe, because that's been one of their big advantages, that they can attract that sort of crowd week in, week out. So I have to be honest. I mean, I would be critical mainly of their what they've done in the past in their terms of their player recruitment. I think even Real Madrid, I mean, it was. I'm getting the seasons because they were overlapping now. Recently, when they bought Mondi, Militao, and one or two others, Hazard, that was a 300 million spend that summer.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen too much out of that. Hazard has been, you know, poor.
Yeah.
Mondi is the one exception that's become a regular.
Yeah, a decent left back. Yeah.
That wasn't 300 million. That could have bought you. Why didn't Real Madrid and Barcelona, why weren't they in a position to have bought Mbappe and Haaland when they were pretty cheap? What did Mbappe go for? I might be wrong there.
It was about 100. It was less than Neymar, wasn't it? It was about 100 million, which was a lot of money, but that and Haaland went on the cheap, and he chose to go to Dortmund, cheap. But I don't know what offers there were from the Spanish clubs. It was a sensible move to go to Dortmund, and he's got a buyout clause, hasn't he, for 120 million, which when you look at, you know, what Barca have spent 120 million on, this guy who resembles like a Minotaur, isn't he? This half man, half bull who can play football.
You think, he's incredible. It's a hard one. After watching Mbappe, you think, God, he's 22 years old. Then you watch Haaland the next night, and I'm thinking, who would I take if I had the resources? Do you know, I've been watching Mbappe and thinking that you know he's the best young player in the world, possibly the best player in the world at the moment. And then the next night you see Haaland, you think, he's 20. And I'm leaning towards Haaland because I think there's fewer players like him around. You know, that focal point of the attack that has, you know, I'm not saying there's many around like Mbappe, but I mean, Haaland is incredible at 20 years of age. Yeah. As you say, he's power, pace, intelligence, his finishing is incredible. They're going to be great to watch those two. Undoubtedly, those two would have been playing for, you know, Real Madrid or Barcelona, or Real Madrid and Barcelona, and that would be the thing. But that's been the big difference. Other clubs have come along. What we have to remember is Real Madrid and Barcelona are not privately run. Mm. They're owned, you know, by supporters. So that means a slight handicap to, you know, to compete in the likes of PSG, Manchester City, You know, Manchester United, Liverpool are owned by wealthy benefactors, so there's a big difference there. But it is. I mean, it's the players at Real Madrid are still the same ones that led them to European glory recently. Yeah. We shouldn't forget that. But of course, time catches up with everybody, and perhaps they're not the team that they once were. I think, you know, even Sevilla won the Europa League last year. So, you know, Bayern Munich won one trophy, Sevilla won the other. It's still good representation for La Liga in terms of keeping up the tradition of doing well in Europe and winning a trophy. That might be may well be the case this season. Don't write Real Madrid off. I think that, you know, if they think that the league is out of reach, they can adapt themselves to concentrate on the Champions League. They've shown historically they can do that, keep big players fit, free from injury. They would have a chance. We could. I don't know, you know, if there's going to be success in the Europa League this year for these Spanish clubs. Yeah. Granada are doing extremely well. Incredible results, beat Napoli 2-0. And Villarreal always threaten. Perhaps under Unai Emery this year, that might be different.
It'd be good to see that, wouldn't it? Yeah. Like you've said before, they never actually win anything. And, you know, they're not winning the league this year, are they, Villarreal? So it'd be good if it does an Unai Emery special, all of his eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
We had a brief debate with Alvaro Romeo. It wasn't really a debate, no one disagreed, with Alvaro Romeo on Twitter, because he mentioned, Spanish journalist, about inward investment. There are pros and cons of inward investment. People are keen, very super rich people, and there's different reasons. Some of them are there because they want to make money out of it. So the huge TV revenue that the Premier League successfully get that La Liga doesn't successfully get. La Liga's not poor, but it's not nearly as rich as the Premier League. So a lot of those guys are coming to take money out of it, which, and then they put money in. So if it works, it's fine. But, you know, as we've seen in Spain and as we've seen in England, it can fail because Malaga has turned out to be a disaster. Valencia, you're thinking, wow, there's foreign investment. What's he there for? And you could name similar English clubs as well. And then there's the other issue, of course, the more moral issue of the sports washing, isn't there? Where you've got questionable regimes who buy football clubs. Let's be honest, PSG. You wouldn't want to live in Qatar as a, you know, as an immigrant worker, but they've got loads of money and they spend it on football. So do you want that in Spain? I'm not sure. You're making a compromise, aren't you? It brings money in, but it changes the nature of what you've got. And it's not a straightforward question, is it? It's not a straightforward question of Spanish football would be saved if more rich foreign money poured in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think it would be beneficial. I like the way that Real Madrid and Barcelona are run. And the majority of clubs in Spain are run. I don't think there's any with Valencia is the prime example. Isn't that probably the one with the most...
Atleti have got Chinese owners, money, and Espanyol, which is another case, isn't it? Espanyol, where you think, what were they there for? You know, I don't see where they're taking money out of the club, and I don't see them putting money. You know, they obviously got relegated. I'm doing all right now, but it's not straightforward, is it?
No, clearly not. I mean, I think that there's, you know, if it would be. I think it'd be wrong if tradition was broken, particularly for the big two, Real Madrid and Barcelona, if they were to suddenly, if Florentino Perez, for instance, was the sole owner. You know, I think there's the way the club is structured over the years, I think it'd be impossible to change as well. Although, you know what supporters are like, if they're not winning leagues and Champions Leagues, not being able to buy the best players, you know, on a regular basis, then... There might be, you know, if they look across to the Premier League and see the likes of Manchester City and Manchester United and Liverpool in particular that are privately owned, that, you know, chucking money at it, then things might change. But I hope not.
Yeah, we need to hear from the listeners, really, isn't it? From the Patreons and from the general listeners, because we'll put this out as a podcast later as well. Do you want to see that change, or... is it a matter of principle that Spanish football stays with? Because you've got the sporting ownership model, which not many have, and it's slightly controversial. And I don't know why, because I think it's the best model. I think the Real Madrid, Barcelona, Osasuna style, where you're not a private company, and for some reason someone in authority doesn't want that. Yeah, I agree with you. I think I'd rather all football clubs were that, and dealing on a sporting basis rather than it being a multi-million...
On a level playing field as well.
Yeah, rather than it being a high finance thing. But yeah, so what do you all think? So get in touch with us on Twitter, or Patreons can obviously direct messages via Patreon as well. Do you want to see a change? And is there a fundamental change in Spanish football that you want? Or are you just going to rough out a tough period? And if it means that Real Madrid and Barcelona do badly, and so the Spanish league as a whole, its coefficient goes down, is that it? We carry on enjoying what we enjoy anyway.
Yep, and I guess then wait for another cycle.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Yeah,
so lots of good young players in the Liga.
I'm always nervous of cycles, though, Terry, because it's smacks of complacency, I think, because I'm still waiting for Hungary to be the best team in the world again. and, of course, Dutch football in the early 70s, you know, Ajax and Feyenoord were European champions in, you know, four seasons in a row, weren't they, between them? But
yeah.
And it doesn't automatically come back. And that's there's a real danger in the Spanish authorities thinking, it will be back, but you won't necessarily. There's no guarantee. There's no right to be at the top of football. You know, you've got to keep working. Oh, right. Here's one more question before we finish. See, when I thought Spanish football is undoubtedly the best league in the world and the best football, I thought the base level of your Spanish player, the huge surge in the Spanish national team, put it another way, 08 to 12, was based on many years of coaching that had gone into it. The real explosion in the number of coaches, an explosion in a load of really good tactical players, because European football was big and physical. And in the 90s, we'd gone into a period where people like Patrick Vieira was the archetypal midfield player in the 90s and you know, into the 2000s. And Spanish football defied the odds with brilliant technical players. Is that still the case, or have other countries caught up with their technical players, or does Spain still have a better base level of technique in there, you know, as you look through the league?
I don't think they do at the moment, I have to be honest. I think we've seen some good young players coming into La Liga again, which gives me hope that in the future these are all going to be, you know, big players around the European football. Also, the fact that most of those Spain players were playing in the regular league, weren't they, in domestic league?
Yeah.
And it was that, then it sort of exploded, and then, you know, clubs around Europe started taking the better players from the league. I don't think the league suffered because of that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at that time, I think what we need in Spanish football is for Real Madrid and Barcelona to be at their best. I think that then maybe hides the cracks in other places in the Liga. So we need a Real Madrid. The best period for me was when I was, you know, working or watching a Galactic, a Clásico, and it was full of every single player was arguably, you know,
somewhere near the world 11.
Top 20 players in European football all playing in one game.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a lot of them playing in the national team for Spain, the South American superstars like Messi and Dani Alves, and then, you know, it's Ronaldo playing for Real Madrid. And so in those particular clashes around it's a while ago now. You know, when Pep and Jose and Pellegrini were managers, and Kaká and players, Xabi Alonso, and, you know, the Barcelona mob as well. It was so we need to somehow La Liga to attract interest throughout the world, to make it exciting around the world. Unfortunately, like in the Premier League, it relies on the big clubs buying the best players or bringing the best young players through. And at the moment, it's tough for, you know, Real Madrid to bring the best young players through. They've bought some. And it's tough for Barcelona because they're having to, you know, field a team with these potential superstars. But what we had back in the, you know, 10 years ago was 20 superstars, 22.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, and the subs coming on as well. You know, they weren't getting a game. That was the peak time for Spanish football, and everybody was interested in it. Viewing figures, I mean, there's still massive interest in Clásicos and when a Madrid derby and when Barcelona play Atletico Madrid, you know, it's still interesting in that, but it's not as it was. But, you know, it does, you know, times do change. Hopefully it comes back, but there's more opposition there, isn't there? Everyone's a lot more clubs have got money to compete with Real Madrid and Barcelona when they wanted the best players in the world. They were fighting against each other, really. Nobody else. Yeah. Now there's half a dozen clubs in the mix that can beat them.
There's a big shakedown in finances going on as well with FFP and obviously COVID and everything. By the way, on the subject of finances, welcome to Liam, our latest Patreon. So thank you very much, Liam, for coming along. I haven't asked you about Atletico against Levante, let's have a chat briefly before we do that. So points dropped. You worried yet if you're Simeone? He was smiling after the game, wasn't he? He was looking remarkably relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good sign, I think. I think the minute he starts getting panicky and that approach, his nerves will get across to the players. So, you know, I think it's right. They're going to drop points. They're not going to win every game from now to the end of the season. No time to panic yet. I mean, it's quite extraordinary that looking at fixtures for this weekend and they play Levante again. No, that can't be right. There must be a mistake there. We've had a weird sort of fixture calendar list this year. But it is. They play Levante at home. So if they were to beat Levante at home over the weekend, which I would expect them to do. I mean, it's been a tough little period with players missing, players coming back from testing positive for COVID. So the fact they didn't get beat, Levante, you know, can be a decent opposition at home. They have a carefree approach, which makes life difficult for all the big teams. You know, the big teams that can't play Levante away, it's always relatively tough fixture. I think he'd like to see them more incisive than what we're seeing. Marco Llorente scores, becoming such a significant player, suggesting he's player of the year in the league this year.
Yeah.
The amount of goals he's scoring, the amount of chances he's creating, and on top of that, the amount of different positions he plays.
Yeah, and so, a physical player in La Liga who can run around fast. And
exactly, yes. So he's fulfilling, you know, far exceeding all the expectations that we had from him a year ago. It's taken so long for him to get to where he is, worked so hard. But he is a more modern type, you know, player that perhaps, you know, the best teams in La Liga need more of to compete in Europe. So, no, I think that there's still, I mean, the gap now is, 6 points, still with a game in hand. I think it's critical they win that game in hand. Yeah. If the gap gets any shorter, then it starts getting interesting, I have to be honest. So they've got to hold their nerve. They've got to make sure they beat Levante at home this weekend. I'm not saying it will be easy. I think they'll do it. I mean, Levante have to work hard to play against Atletico in 90 minutes, let alone twice in a week. Whether they can go again and reach that level of performance we saw in the game at home remains to be seen, whereas Atletico got players coming back. There'll be more back this week from there. I mean, João Félix was on the bench after COVID. There's still one or two others missing. They'll be back soon. So, no, they're still in good shape. Not the worst result in the world, joining at Levante.
Yeah. Right. Enjoy your football this weekend. It starts with Betis versus Getafe. None of those.
Getting a decent game on the Friday and the Monday. It's Osasuna and Sevilla on Monday night as well. So,
yeah.
That's better.
Yes, and none of those nasty foreigners coming and upsetting our nice Spanish La Liga defenders. Running fast past them and all of that. Anyway, we will be back. So enjoy La Liga this weekend and all the football that you watch, and we'll see you for another podcast in the early part of next week.